Welcome back to Talk of the Town on 99.7 and 1450 WHTC, on WHTC.com, and on the WHTC app for your smartphone. Once again, here's your host, Gary Stevens.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town for this Monday, July 15th. It is the third Monday of the month, which means we catch up with two members of the Lakeshore's legislative delegation. We focus on the State Senate. We'll be joined a little bit later by State Senate Minority Whip Roger Victory of Hudsonville. But right now we are joined by the State Senate Minority Leader, Eric Nesbitt, of the Lawton area. He joins us via the phone this morning. Eric, good morning and welcome back, sir. Glad you're with us.
Hey, thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me back on, and good morning.
If you have a question about state politics, state government activities, Eric will be happy to answer it at 616-395-1450, 616-395-1450. I do want to start talking about state politics first because I have a funny feeling that if we went in a different direction, we may not get to state government topics before the end of the top of the hour. The spending plan has been put on Governor Whitmer's desk by the end of last month, and it just seems as if it was one party doing what it wants to do and not much input from the minority party. Did you see it that way?
Yeah, it was absolutely the case. Unfortunately, they decided to pass a partisan budget, a partisan school aid fund budget. I kept on making overtures to say we could find a bipartisan landing spot on both of these. But unfortunately, the budget was built upon Governor Whitmer's $700 million income tax increase, and the school aid fund budget was built on a $670 million diversion from the teacher pension fund. And this is why Republicans just could not support it. And it's something where it's going to set up for future budgets, I think failures in future budgets. And it's unfortunate that Governor Whitmer continues to play it alone and work to make it her way or the highway.
It seems as if, and I want to put 2 points in here. First, just what you just mentioned, the governor saying she's going it alone, her way or the highway, is it... We've seen this story before, 4 years ago during the COVID-19 outbreak, doing it alone. Basically, no change?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be her modus operandi is that, why work with the, broader parties? I mean, Michigan's a purple state. It's a swing state. I mean, the Democrats only have a majority in the House and Senate by one seat in each chamber, and that was by 400 votes. But it's unfortunate that they want to, what they passed out of the legislature, I think, was abysmal. And it's something where they have to own it now going into this year's election. And they're going to have to own it in terms of how they're setting up, I think, for failure in the future. I mean, once again, Lancy Democrats have gone on a reckless spending spree with taxpayer money. And the budget continues to grow the size of government, increases corporate welfare while doing nothing to help struggling Michiganders to get by. In fact, it did the opposite, increased income taxes on all working families here in the state and small businesses. And it grows government again. Nearly 500 new state government, positions are created. This is on top of nearly 1,000 that were created last year. So instead of concentrating on how to grow the economy and get business here in the state, Governor Whitmer and the Democrats seem concentrated on really growing the size and scope of government. And this is on top of, blowing through a record $9 billion surplus last year, budget surplus, and Democrats are raiding the teacher retirement fund to keep up their spending spree. Under the Republican legislature and Governor Snyder, we've paid down nearly half of our unfunded liability here in the state. It's went from $70 billion to $35 billion. If we continue to put the foot on the pedal, continue to accelerate to pay down that debt, compounded interest is a wonderful thing. And over the next 14 years, we'd be able to completely pay off our unfunded liability in the state. What a wonderful thing that would be in terms of turning the state around, making sure you have resources to be able to educate our kids and fix our roads. But this is an irresponsible budget, risks returning Michigan to the lost decade of Jennifer Granholm and endless budget deficits and people leaving the state. And unfortunately, under the governor's economic development strategy, which it seems only concentrated on electric vehicles and not a broader increase of economic activity here in the state, is that we're losing population again in Michigan, and that's the wrong direction to take us, especially as we see, schools failing and our infrastructure failing.
Now, the other point I was going to bring up a few moments ago, Eric, was the fact that I would think if there was going to be not negotiations, but conversations, dialogue over putting together a spending plan that includes, yes, the majority does have the gavel, but also put in input that the minority party wants to do. That really should have been done behind the scenes and not try to force amendments in on the floor of the Senate or the floor of the House. It really should have been maybe worked behind the scenes. Was there even any putting forward by the majority party towards the Republicans saying, hey, let's talk about some solutions, let's work together? Or was it just simply, here's the bill on the floor, and you have to put the amendments in, and had no input before that bill was put on the floor?
Well, unfortunately, with the way budgets are done, with no review, no transparency, that these, that they're 1,000-plus page bills that are passed without anybody being able to read it, it presents a real challenge of even the majority knowing what's even in these bills and legislation as they're passed. And that creates, I think, some real challenges in terms of what's actually money being spent on and where is it going. And you see that with, I think a 90% decrease in mental health and security resources for our public schools. That's something where I don't even think the majority knew that, that it was cut by 90%. And yet they were having to vote on it, and they pushed it through the House and Senate chambers. I kind of drew a line early on saying that they were going to raid the teacher pension fund. They shouldn't expect any votes from the Senate Republicans. And unfortunately, they refused to even come to, the negotiating table anywhere on saying, we're not going to raid the teacher pension fund. They went ahead and do it. They're saying it's only for 1 year, but it sets up a really bad, really bad budget process for next year and will likely push us into having to deal with deficits starting next year because of this spending plan.
Interesting if reporters ask the majority in the Senate this time next year about maybe this quote-unquote raid of the pension plan again. Well, you said it was only going to be for 1 year. I kind of wonder if they're going to say, we never said that. Is it going to be, a selective memory? I don't know. It just seems as if, once something gets moving, especially in government, it just keeps on moving. It's kind of hard to stop. It's like a glacier.
Yeah, and that's going to be the challenge, is that, 15 years ago with Governor Snyder and Republican legislature, we made a lot of tough decisions. Came in with a, 15% unemployment rate, $2 billion budget deficit, all the federal Obama bucks, going away, and we had to make some tough decisions. We had one of the worst, worst business taxes in the nation. We had a, growing size of government, even as the economy was shrinking and people were leaving the state. We had to make some tough decisions, and those decisions we made have been able to, the goal is over the next decade and a half to free up a lot of resources to make us more competitive and to prioritize, infrastructure, roads, law enforcement, and education. what they're doing with this budget is a colleague of mine calls it the beg, borrow, and steal budget. Is they continue for for roads, borrows another $800 million of loans on the credit card. Beg money from the steals money from the teacher pension fund, and then it increases taxes on all working families in Michigan. It's a very sad state of affairs in terms of the budgeting process in Michigan.
If you got a question for State Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt of the Lawton area, 616-395-1450, 616-395-1450. As we move, being we as a state, moves towards the August 6th primary election, the House, of course, is up. All the seats are open in the state House, and there's also other seats as well. How important is the August 6th election in terms for the Republicans to have candidates step forward, win the election, and have a unified Republican effort going into November 5th?
Well, you see that at the Republican National Convention this week. I mean, just the, with President Trump getting the nomination again, barely surviving an assassination attempt just centimeters away from us out of what happened Saturday. I think you're going to see some strength and resolve. The resolve on President Trump is unbelievable. And going to Milwaukee yesterday, and you're going to see this week as a united Republican Party that you haven't seen in decades. And as you go into the convention and then you go into the primary in August, I think you're going to see a big win with Mike Rogers in the U.S. Senate race, and you're going to set it up that Michigan is, Governor Whitmer last week on her book tour says Michigan's a swing state, and you're going to see that going this fall with what I think is going to be a unified ticket with President Trump at the top, with Mike Rogers running for U.S. Senate, and a lot at stake at the federal level. But here locally at the state level, the Democrats have a 56-54 majority in the state House. And I feel as you go into this fall's election that there's four Democrats running in state House seat, incumbent Democrats that are in seats that Trump won twice in both 16 and 20. And I think there's another 14 seats that Trump won either in 16 or in 20. And so I think Democrats in a very tough position going into the fall. Republicans are unified, and I think we're going to win the state House. I think Mike Rogers is going to win and serving the majority in the U.S. Senate, and Donald Trump is going to be serving in the White House come January. And this is something where, one, is that at the state level, you're going to have to, any budgets, any bills that get signed, they have to be bipartisan because of the Republican House. And I think that's something where you're going to show a little better balance. At the federal level, you saw 4 years ago where President Trump was making peace deals in the Middle East. We had a safe and secure southern border. We did not have a war going on in Ukraine. And China was shrinking instead of growing. And I think, and you didn't have this inflation that's going on with high energy prices and the most expensive vehicle on the road, it seems to be a shopping cart right now from all this inflation, Bidenflation that's going on. And I think there's going to be a stark difference outside of what you're trying to see from the Democrats is kind of over the top language of saying that democracy is at risk. It's the end of the republic, and I think it's just vile over the top language as you're seeing from the far left wing Democrats. I think they're going to fail this fall, and in America and Michigan's at a turning point, and how are we going to respond to that?
616-395-1450. If you have a question for State Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt, 616-395-1450. Before we had our segment, we took a few calls stemming from what happened this past Saturday in Pennsylvania involving former President Trump. And somebody asked me, what's going to happen in terms of, they mentioned that it was might be a life-changing experience for Mr. Trump. And I said, no, I think it's going to embolden him because he's going to feel as if he got through it. And the actions he's done since what happened on Saturday, to me, sounds like somebody who was strengthened by the attempt on his life, not weakened by the attempt on his life.
Well, I think we'll see in his speech on Thursday the direction that he's going to be going. But it's something where the resolve of the person, shows the resolve of President Trump. Let's look at it. Is that, a billionaire businessman who could have a very good life jetting between New York and Florida and New Jersey instead of being on the grind of the campaign trail and coming within a centimeter of his life of an assassin's bullet, and yet he's reinvigorated to say there is something great about America, there's something special about our nation, about our Constitution, about our people, and the importance of having a strong America going forward. And I think he truly believes that. It's not about him. It's about our nation and where we're going. I think you're going to see that at the Republican National Convention this week, is how do you make America safer, more prosperous, in making the world a safer place from having America with that, carry a big stick and by rebuilding our military and having the strength abroad that we saw just 4 years ago instead of this wild action that we see around the world and weakness from the Biden administration. My heart, first of all, my heart breaks for the victims and their families and in our country of what we saw on Saturday night. I was just, my wife and I were just, speechless. This is something that, again, you go back to Reagan's assassination attempt in the early 80s, and you go, there's a lot of, my parents and others, remember the day that the JFK was shot in Dallas. But I'm thankful for the sake of Trump and his family and the sake of our country that Donald Trump's safe and alive, and that he's his resolve and tenacity is ready to continue to fight for America. And thankful for the law enforcement and their response. It seems like there's a real challenge with with the Secret Service on what's out there. Let's sort this out. It seems unbelievably bad that an assassin got as close as they did and wasn't taken out earlier by law enforcement. My hope is that there's a full and fair investigation and that the Trump and President Trump and his family can make sure that they have the full protection as needed. There's no greater threat to democracy than the fear of death for exercising our basic rights to vote and to assemble. And this is something where an assassin's bullet just about disrupted our democracy. And yet you see the media and the headlines and how just the next day you saw the New York Times in their editorial section of their paper, saying Trump failed the test of leadership and betrayed America. Voters must reject him in November. I mean, that's the front page of the Sunday opinion paper in the New York Times the next day. And they're the ones going after President Trump with his rhetoric, and yet the left continues to be, I think, a lot of danger in their words and what they say. And so let's all take a little step back. Let's see where folks are, and let's concentrate on the issues and the policies and let's say, on how to really make America great again and get us back into a place where we actually lower the temperature in the room and care about the issues such as peace in the world, a secure border, less crime and more safety for American families, less inflation and lower debts and deficits that people can, that America can be prosperous again.
Eric, last week, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission held a hearing on the request by Holtec International to restart the Palisades nuclear power plant in Covert after it had been shut down a couple of years ago, restarted sort of on a new type of system where it would be maybe a more efficient and probably less dangerous to operate than the old plant. And it looks as if the NRC is going to try to get all opinions in before they make a final decision, not trying to make a decision beforehand.
I mean, it sounds like all systems go with Palisades. I think the NRC has to go through, as part of their process, these public hearings and some other these review. But they've been doing the engineering studies, and other studies needed to get it reopened. And it sounds like between the loan, you know, the federal loan, and some of the state resources to get a restart, along with private sector resources, the contract that they have with Wolverine, which is a power supplier with the co-ops, a lot of the Michigan cooperatives like Midwest Energy or Great Lakes, you know, they supply a lot of the power for that. That it does sound like Palisades is hiring. They're bringing in the engineers that they need. They're lining up the fuel, and the resources that they need. And from best of my understanding, is that by the end of next year, we should be having that 800 megawatts of power, and Covert should be back online if everything goes as planned.
You know, it would be nice to be able to do that and to, help the economy. You know, you being in Van Buren County, how important that plant is for Van Buren County's economy, because it provides a good amount of the economic boost for the entire county, not just the South Haven area.
Yeah, I mean, 8 years ago when they tried to shut it down early, I fought like hell to keep it open, and we got it extended a few more years. But unfortunately, Entergy wanted to get, you know, both Entergy and Consumers Energy wanted to get out of that contract. It was shut down. I got it extended a few more years. It shut down a few years earlier than what we wanted to. Now, hopefully, they can show the Germans that you can restart these facilities and you don't have to depend on Russia for your gas and oil.
Now, speaking about energy, and I believe this is in your district because, you know, with this reconfiguration of a couple of years ago, I'm not certain which is in which part of Allegan County is in yours and which is in somebody else's. But I believe the Calkin Street Dam, the Allegan Dam, is in your district. And, Consumers mm-hmm. wants to close it. But the people around there are saying, hey, wait a minute. It's a vital part of our community. How much are you involved in trying to make sure that Calkin Street Dam is still operational? And if Consumers doesn't want to run it no more, maybe somebody else does.
Yeah, they're going through a study right now. I think that'll be done by the end of this year. Consumers is seeing the economics of it. This is a wider challenge that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission of the U.S. government is having a real challenge with a lot of these dams around the nation, is that they're adding a lot of cost that doesn't increase efficiency or increase the amount of energy coming out of these dams. And so they're becoming less economical. And so we've been engaged with both Consumers Energy and with the residents around the lake, Lake Allegan, and trying to figure out what's a long-term plan to make sure that that dam's protected. If Consumers isn't going to run it, then is somebody else willing to run it? Are they able to sell it? And that's kind of the process that's going through now. Or do you create an authority kind of like you have on Maple Lake and Pawpaw, where it doesn't produce energy anymore, but the residents create an authority to make sure that it's taken care of, to make sure that the residents that have lake property around there still have their property values and still enjoy the recreation of the lake. So there's no final decision on it from what my conversations with Consumers are and with the Public Service Commission and others. I think there may be more clarity at the end of this year, beginning of next year, on what the next steps are.
Eric Nesbitt, as always, thank you. We'll talk to you in August.
Hey, thanks, Gary. God bless you.